Hello everyone and welcome back to the MTG's Novels Project. The MTG Novels Project is available both on YouTube and as a podcast version. Check the description for more details. A legal note, this is an unofficial audiobook with original content belonging to Wizards of the Coast. This content is covered under the 2017 Wizards of the Coast fan content policy. Listener discretion is advised. Today we'll be reading Chapter 8 of Planeswalker by Lynn Abbey. Xantcha guided the sphere with a rigid hand. The glimmer moon hung low in the night sky, painfully bright, yet providing little illumination for the land below. A dark ridge loomed to the south. On the other side of that ridge, there was a familiar cottage, with two front doors and the bed in which she'd expect to be sleeping before midnight. It was a clear night, reminiscent of winter. The air was dead calm and freezing within the sphere. Her feet had been quietly numb since sundown. Beside her, Rat hadn't said a word since the first stars appeared. She hoped he was asleep. And perhaps he was, but he awoke when the sphere pitched forward and plummeted towards a black mirror lake Xantcha had noticed. It had nearly been 2 weeks to learn when to tuck his head and keep his terror to himself. But in the dark, with food and whatnot tumbling around, Xantcha didn't begrudge Rat a moment of panic. In truth, she scarcely noticed his shouts. The plunge caught her unprepared. It was several moments before she heard anything other than her own heart pounding. By then, Rat had reclaimed his perch atop the sacks. "You could set us down for the night," he suggested. "We're almost there." "You said that at noon." "It was true then, and it's truer now. We're almost at the cottage." Rat made an unhappy noise in the back of his throat. Xantcha gave him a sidelong glance. Through the dim light, she could see that he hunched down in his cloak and pulled a cowl up so that it formed a funnel around his face. She'd collected Rat's new clothes as she ferried red-striped survivors to the other Ifan villages. There were nothing like the clothes Misha would have worn, nothing like the travel-worn silks and suede Xantcha herself wore, but they were the best she'd been able to find, and Rat had been generally grateful for them. He cleaned up better than Xantcha had dared hope. Their first full day in the ruined village, while she'd talked to about relocating the elders, Rat had persuaded one of the women to trim his hair. He'd procured a handful of pumice the same way, and spent that afternoon scrubbing and being scrubbed in the stream-fed pool where the woman did laundry. "You didn't have to bother the villagers," Xantcha had told him when they sat next to him, all pink and raw, especially on the chin. "I could have loaned you my knife." He'd looked down, shaking her his head, and half-smiled. "When you're old enough to grow whiskers, Xantcha, you'll realize a man doesn't have to cut his own hair." Xantcha had started to say that, with or without whiskers, Rat would never be as old as she was, but that half-smile had confused her. Even now, when she couldn't see through the dark or the cowl, she suspected that he was half-smile again, and she didn't know what to say. Once washed and dressed in clothes that didn't reek, he'd proved attractive, at least to the extent Xantcha understood mortal handsomeness. Rat didn't reassemble any of Urza's antiquity war portraits, and there was a generosity to him that softened the otherwise hard lines of his face. Rat had healed almost as fast as a newt. His bristles were shadows now, and the sores around his back, neck, and wrists shrank daily. Every morning had seen a bit more flesh in his bones, a bit more swagger in his stride. He'd become Mishra, charming, passionate, unpredictable, and vaguely dangerous. Kayla Bing-Krug would have known what to say. Kayla had known what to say to Urza's brother, but Xantcha wasn't Urza's wife. And anyway, Rat thought of her as a boy. A exception that all other things considered, Xantcha thought she might continue after they returned to the cottage, if Urza cooperated. She touched his shoulder gingerly. "Don't worry, we'll be there tonight." Rat shrugged her hand away. The cowl fell. She could see his face faintly in the moonlight. He wasn't smiling. "Tonight, or tomorrow morning, what difference can it make? Urza's waiting. It's been a month more. It's been more than a month since I left. I've never been gone this long. You've been gone forever if you don't push yourself. Even if he is the real Urza, he'd tell you to rest before you hurt yourself. Rat didn't know Urza. Urza was inexhaustible, indestructible. He assumed Zacha was too. And so usually did she. We're almost there. I'm not tired. I don't need rest. The words were no sooner said than the sphere caught another downdraft. Not as precipitous as the first one, but enough to fling them against each other. You're making mistakes. You know nothing about this, Zacha shot back. She held her hand too far, overcorrected, and wound up in Rat's lap. He pushed her away. What more do I need to know? Put it down. I won't argue with you when you said those villagers need to be rescued. I'm not arguing with you. I know you want to meet Mishra. You think that's not a moment to lose against the Phyrexians. But not like this, Ancha. This is foolish. As foolish as buying me in the first place. Only I can help you get this damn thing in the air. Right. You can't help, so be quiet. And he was quiet. As he'd been the first night out of Medran. Zacha had believed it possible, but Rat's silence was worse than Urza's, because Rat wasn't ignoring her. He wasn't frightened either, just sitting beside her, a cold, blank wall, even when she pushed the sphere against the wind. There's moments that she could believe that Rat was Urza's real brother. You don't have to be Mishra, not yet. Another of Rat's annoying noises. I'm not being Mishra. Mishra wouldn't care if you killed herself getting him to Urza. And if you asked me, the real Urza wouldn't either. The real Urza didn't care about anything except that what he wanted. The way you're acting, I'm starting to think that what you've been telling me, it's all over your face, Ancha. You're the one who's worried because you're afraid. More afraid of the man you call Urza, I think, than any Phyrexian. It was Ancha's turn to stare at the black ridge of the southern horizon, convincing herself that Rat was wrong. The ridge was beneath them before she broke the silence. You don't believe anything I've told you. It's pretty far-fetched. But you've come all this way with me. You were so many times when I figured the village was about that you could have ran away, but you didn't. I thought you decided I was telling you the truth. Why did you stop trying to run away if you didn't believe anything I said? Because 6 months ago, I would have sworn my life that I'd never leave Efron Petkar. Not with some half-wit boy who's got a thing in his belly. I've sworn a lot of times 6 months ago, and I'd be wrong about all of them. I'm getting used to being wrong, and I did give you my word. Freely, when you agreed to get those visitors safely, I'd play your game. You weren't paying attention, but I was. You saved them because I asked you to, and that makes you my friend, at least for now. You've got to believe, Rat. If you don't believe, Urza won't. And I don't know what he'll do to either of us if he thinks I tried to deceive him. I'll worry about Erda the Artificer, Rat said wearily. He was patronizing her, despite everything she told him, all lessons in language and history she'd given to him after dark in the village. Rat didn't believe. He continued. You worry about that shadow coming up. I think it's another lake. I think we're about to rump over elbows again if you don't wriggle your hand about it. Rat was right about the lake. Sancha wove her hand to one side, and another unpleasant moment was averted. It had taken her decades to learn the trick that air could play on the sphere. Rat was quicker and cleverer than she'd ever been. There's a chance he was right, too, about Urza, especially when she said Eldritch light leaking through the college windows after the sphere cleared the ridge. He's locked himself in, she muttered, unable to keep disappointment out of her voice. You didn't think he'd be waiting by the door, not in the middle of the night. A locked door isn't a bad idea if you're alone, and you've got the sorcerer to make it stick. A man gets tired, said Rat. Not Urza, Sancha said softly as the sphere touched down and collapsed. Without the sphere skin to support them, their surprise rearranged themselves on the ground. It was quicker than the chaos they endured when the sphere tumbled through the air, but quite a bit more painful on the hard ground. A wooden box corner came down squarely on Sancha's cold ankle. She was still cursing when the eldritch locks vanished. Urza appeared in the doorway. Zacha, where have? He knows his rat. His eyes began to glow. Zacha hadn't considered the possibility that Urza might kill any stranger who appeared outside his door. No. Zacha wanted to get herself between no two men, but her feet wouldn't cooperate. Urza, listen to me. He no sooner got Urza's attention than Rat wrested it away with a single soft-spoken word. Brother. Every night in the village, Zansha had sat up with Rat, telling him about Urza's obsessions. She'd warned him about Urza's uncanny eyes and the pterobots where his gnats recreated, refined, the scene from Kayla's epic. She taught him the rudiments of the polyglot language she and Urza spoke when they were alone, because it was rich in the words he'd share with Mishra when they were both men. She taught him the words for brother, and instead, he practiced it until he got it right. But the first thing he said was pure Efran dialect. For a moment, the space between them was as dark as the space between the stars overhead. Then the gold light had been in the college flowed from Urza towards Rat, who didn't flinch as it surrounded him. "You wished to see my brother," he continued in Efran. "It's been a long journey, but I've come back." Urza could absorb a new language as easy as he plowed a field, absorbing the spring rains. Most of the time, he didn't notice the switch. But Zansha had thought Urza might pay attention to Mishra's language, to a language that anyone pretending to be Mishra spoke during the first critical moments of the encounter. She was ready to kill Rat with her own hands, but if Urza didn't do it for her. His eyes hadn't stopped glowing, and she'd seen those jewels obliterate creatures vastly more powerful than an overconfident slave from Efun Pekarn. "Speak to me, Urza. It's been so long. We never finished our last conversation. Never truly began it." "Where?" Urza asked, a cold whisper on a cold wind. At least he spoke Efruand. "Before the blood-red tent of the warlord Krug. We stood as far apart as we are now. You said we should remember that we were brothers. The tent was not red. I said no such thing." "Do you call me a liar, brother? I remember less, brother. But I remember very clearly. I've been here all the time, waiting for you. It would have been easier if your memories were not flawed." Urza's eyes took on the plain, painful brilliance of the glimmer moon. Zansha was certain that Rat would sizzle like raindrops in a bonfire, yet the light didn't harm him, and after a few rib-thumping heartbeats, she began to perceive Rat's unexpected brilliance. The real Mishra had been severely competent, never, even in the best of times, willing to concede a point to his elder brother. Between Urza and Misha's attitude was more important than the language, and Rat had the right attitude. "It is possible," Urza conceded, as his eyes dimmed to a mortal color. "Each time I refined my automata, I learned what I had forgotten. It is a short step between forgotten and misremembered." Raising his hands, Urza took a hesitant stride towards Rat, toward Mishra. He stopped short of touching his putative brother's flesh. "I dreamed that in time, through time, I'd find a way to talk to you, to warn you of the dangers neither of us saw when we were alive together. I never dreamed you would find me, you. It is you, Mishra." Urza moved without moving, placed his open hand across Rat's cheek. Even Zansha, who knew Urza could change his shape faster than muscle, could move bone, was stunned. As for himself, Rat, who refused to believe her warnings that Urza was Urza who'd become more like a god than a man, he went deadly pale beneath Urza's long, elegant, and essentially lifeless fingers. His eyes rolled and his body slackened. He'd fainted, but Urza's curiosity kept him upright. "They took your skin, Mishra. They stretched it over one of their abominations. Do you remember? Do you remember them coming for you? Do you remember dying?" Rat's limp arms and legs began to tremble. Zansha's breath caught in her throat. She never believed that Urza was cool, merely careless. He lived so long in his mad isolation that he'd forgotten the frailties of ordinary flesh, especially of flesh more ordinary than a Phyrexian newt. She was certain that once Urza knows what he was doing, he'd relent. He could heal as ready as harm. But Urza didn't notice what he was doing to the youth he'd brought from Efren Pekar. Rat writhed like a struck serpent, blood seeking from his ohms. Zansha threw herself in the gold light. "Stop!" Urza seized Mishra's arc-like arm. She might have been flying on a mountaintop for the effect she had. "You're killing him!" Suddenly, Urza's arm hung on his side again. Zansha reeled backwards, fighting for balance while Rat collapsed. "There's nothing in his mind. I sought the answers that have eluded me. When did the Phyrexians come for him? Did he fight? Did he surrender willingly? Did he call my name? He has no answer, Zansha. I do not understand. I found you too late. The damage has already been done. But how? Why has Misha come back to me if he is not himself? If his mind is not alive with thoughts, I know should be there. Sansa knew her mind was empty. She was a Phyrexian, a newt, engendered in a vat of turgid slime. She had no imagination, no great thoughts or ambition, not even a heart that could be crushed by humiliation, whether humiliation came from Urza or Gix. That was another matter. He lay face down in a heap of awakened, awkwardly bent limbs. He's a man, such a starred. She caught her balance, but kept her distance. Another step closer, and she'd be a child, looking up beneath Urza's eyes. She was too angry for that. His mind is his own. He's not a book for you to read and cast aside. Sansa couldn't guess whether Rat was still alive, even when Urza put his foot against the youth's flank to shove him onto his back. This is only the first. There'll be others. The first is never final. There must always be refinements. If I've learned nothing else, I've learned that I was working in the wrong direction, thinking I could reach back through time to find Misha and the truth. Because I was not looking for Misha. He could not find me. Not as he must find me. But his truth would come to me once I refined the path. I can see them, Sansa. A line of Mishas, each bearing a piece of truth. They will come and come until one of them bears it all. Urza head to his open door. There's no time, he stopped and laughed around. Time, Sansa. Think of it. I have found a way to navigate time. I will start again. Do not disturb me. He was mad, Sansa reminded herself. She'd been a fool to think that she could outwit him. Unlike Rat, Urza never changed his mind. He interpreted everything through the prism of his obsessions. Urza could be held responsible for what happened. That burden fell on her. Sansa had never kept count of those he'd slain or watched die. Surely there were hundreds, thousands if she included Phyrexians. But she never betrayed anyone, as she'd betrayed Rotepe, Sam, and Medea. She knelt beside him, stiffening his corpse, starting with his legs. Rotepe hadn't begun to stiffen. His skin was still warm. There'll be no others. Urza turned around. What did you say? I said this was a man, Urza. He was a man, born living until you killed him. He wasn't an artifact on your table that you could sweep onto the floor when you were finished with him. You didn't make him. She hesitated, burdened with guilt. She saw that their clever plan to have Rotepe pose as Misha required confession. The tabletop didn't reach to the pass. I went looking for a man who resembled your brother. I found him and brought him here. I won't do it again. So they won't. You, Sansa. Don't speak nonsense. This was my brother. The first shadow of my brother. You could have not found him without me. I'm not speaking nonsense. You had nothing to do with this, Urza. This was my idea. My bad idea. His name is never Misha. His name is Rotepe, son of Medea. I brought him from a slaver in Efren Pakar. Urza appeared thunderstruck. Sansa leaned forward to straighten Rotepe's other leg. Efren's birds are dead in grass-lined graves that face the sun. She'd helped dig several of them. There was a suitable spot not far from the window where she'd see it easily, lamenting her folly every time she did. Unless she left, soaring back to Efren Pakar to do battles with the Phyrexians in Rotepe's name. If the Sith would still respond to her whims, if Urza didn't restore her when her thoughts finally made back to the world of life and death. She reached for Rotepe's crooked arm. A slaver? You sought my brother's avatar in a slaver's pens? Avatar, a spirit captured in flesh. Sansa recognized the word, but never consciously used it. It was the right word, though, for what she wanted Rotepe to become. Yes, she straightened Rotepe's elbow. Misha was a Falaji slave. Misha was an advisor to the Quadir. Misha was a slave. The Falaji captured him before he got to Yodia. They never freed him, not formally. It's in the Antiquity Wars, he told Kayla. She wrote down his words. Sansa had never told Urza about her chest full of copies of his wife's epic. He hadn't asked, hadn't volunteered any sense of his past were here in his home, except what arose from his tabletop artifacts. He didn't appear pleased to hear Kayla's name falling off her tongue. Sansa sensed she was living dangerously, very dangerously. She took Rotepe's hand. It was stiff, where it had begun. Gently, she uncurled his fingers. They resisted. Tightened, squeezed. Before she could think, Sansa jerked her hand away, or tried to. But Tepe didn't let go. and she stayed where she was, kneeling beside him. Bessus was shocked. She looked down. He winked, then kept both eyes shut. "Waste not what, not," she whispered. Clasping her glance quickly in Urza's direction, but Urza was elsewhere. "I did not tell you to read that story," his voice came from the cold place far from his heart. "Caleb and Krug never knew the truth, and did not write it either. She chose to live in a mist, with neither light nor shadow to guide her. You cannot believe anything in antiquity wars. Sancha, especially about Mishra. My wife saw her world through a pattern of emotions. She saw people. When she saw my brother, he didn't finish his thought, but authored another. She didn't mean to betray me. I'm sure she thought it could be the bridge between us. It was too late. I honored Harbin, but after that, it was all lies between us. I couldn't trust her. You can't either. Before Sancha could say that Kaya's version of the war made more sense, Sancha sat bolt upright. I've heard it said that there is no man, no way a man can be absolutely certain that his wife's child is his, and only one way he can be certain that it's not. Caleb and Krug was an attractive woman, Urza, and wiser than you know. She did try to become a bridge, but not with her body. She was tempted. I made certain she was tempted, but she never succumbed, which my brother begs one almighty question. How, and why are you so certain, Harbin was not your son? Suddenly they were in darkness, as Urza's gore light vanished. You've done it now, Sancha said softly, with more than a little admiration. She'd never gotten the better of Urza that way. He's gone. Walking. But Urza hadn't walked away. When the light returned, it flowed from an Urza that Sancha had never seen before. A youthful Urza, dressed in a dirty laborer's dusty clothing, and smiling as he reached out to tape with Tepe's hand. I've missed you, brother. I've had no one to talk to. Stand up, stand up. Come with me. Let me show you what I've learned while you were gone. It was Ashnod, you know. When Tepe proved he was as consistent as he was reckless, he folded his arms across his chest and stood where he was. You've had Sancha. He's not no one. Sancha. Well, Urza last. Sancha got to her feet. Sancha I rescued 1,000 years ago. No longer than that. More than 3,000 years ago. Don't be fooled by appearances, as I was. She's Phyrexia. Cooked up in one of their vats. A mistake. A failure. A slave. They were getting ready to bury her when I came along. Though she was Argivian at first. She's loyal to me. She's got her own reasons for turning on Phyrexia. But her mind is limited. You can talk to her, but only a fool would listen. Sancha couldn't meet with Tepe's eyes. When they were alone and Urza belittled her, she could blame it on his madness. Now, there are three of them standing outside the cottage. Urza wasn't talking to her. He was talking about her. And there were no excuses. All their centuries together, all their experiences, no one else had shared, and he'd conquered his distrust, his disdain. I think, Retepe began, and Sancha forced him to catch his attention. She mouthed a single word. Don't. It didn't matter what Urza thought of her, so long as he stopped playing with the tabletop gnats. Sancha mouthed a second word, Phyrexian, and made a fist where Retepe could see it. She hoped she told him what mattered, and it wasn't her. Retepe cleared his throat. He said, I think it's not the time to argue, Urza. Mary's words sound sincere. We have always done too much of that. I always did too much of that. There, I've admitted it, and the world did not end. Not yet. Not again. You think we made our final mistake on the plains of Kor? I think we made it earlier. After so long, it doesn't matter, does it? It was the same mistake either way. We couldn't talk. We could only compete. And you won. I see the weak stone in your left eye. Have you heard it singing to you, Urza? Sing? Anyone who read the Antiquity Wars would know that Urza's eyes had once been his might stone and his brother's weak stone. Tanos had brought that scout back to Kayla, but Tepe claimed he'd read Kayla's epic several times. Between two stones and two eyes, he could have made a lucky guess. The weak stone had indeed become Urza's left eye, but Sing? Urza had never mentioned singing. Sancho couldn't guess what fired Retepe's all-too-mortal imagination. But as Urza frowned and stared at the stars, she guessed it had purported too far. Then Urza began to speak. "I hear it now, faintly, without word, but a song of sadness. Your song." Sancho was stunned. Urza continued. "The stone we found, the Stingle Stone, was a weapon, you know. The final defense of the Thran, their last sacrifice. They blocked the portal to Phyrexia. You and I, when we sundered the stone, we opened the portal. We laid them back into Dominaria. I never asked you what you saw that day," Retepe grinned. "Didn't I say that we made a mistake much earlier?" Urza clapped his hand together and laughed heartily. "You did. Yes, you did. We've got a second chance, brother. This time, we'll talk." He opened his arms, gesturing towards the open doorway. "Come, let you show me what I've learned while you're gone. Let me show the wonders of artifact. Pure artifacts, brothers. None of those Phyrexian abominations. And Ashnod. Wait until I show you Ashnod, a viper at your breast, brother. She was the first conquest. Your biggest mistake." "Show me everything, Retepe said, walking into Urza's embrace. "Then we'll talk." Arm in arm, they walked towards the cottage. A few steps short of the threshold, Retepe shot a glance over his shoulder. He seemed to expect some gesture from her, but Sancho, unable to guess what it should be, simply stood with her eyes looking at her sides. "And when we're done talking, Urza, we'll listen to Sancho." The door shut without a sound. Light was gone, and Sancho was left with only moonlight to help her haul the food supplies. That has been Chapter 8 of Planeswalker. Thank you for listening. Please like, subscribe, and follow on YouTube or on your chosen podcast platform.